for a new Ford, make it Bill Curry, Tampa Bay's first family of Ford for over 60 years. At Bill Curry, our prices are better than good. They're the best, and they're right up front with our $5,000 best price guarantee. That's right, Bill Curry will meet or beat any Ford dealer's best offer or give you $5,000 cash. Shop our huge selection of new Fords, then get the lowest price, the best price, or we'll give you $5,000 cash. Only at Bill Curry Ford, located on Dale Mabry, a mile north of Raymond James Stadium.
Broadcasting from the ESPN Tallahassee studios in Florida's capital city and in partnership with the JoeBucksFan.com podcasting network, this is the Scuttlebucks on 97.9 ESPN Radio. The Scuttlebucks with Jeff Cameron and Tom Lang is presented by Bill Curry Ford, Tampa's hometown Ford dealer for nearly 60 years and home of the nationwide lifetime warranty for new and pre-owned vehicles. BillCurryFord.com. Here's ESPN and Tallahassee's Jeff Cameron and Tom Lang.
All right, welcome in, Scuttlebucks. Good to be with you as always, especially after a win, huh? After a win, my man. Bucks take down the Cardinals. I know what. You're going to celebrate a win over the Cardinals, Cameron? Yes, I'm going to celebrate a win over the Cardinals. We lose every close game we ever play. How about winning one of these? All right. 30-27, and should be a holiday. We told Vernon Hargraves to go to hell, too. All right. Way to go, Bucks. Yeah, good times in Tampa Bay, baby. We get a win, hard fought, down to the wire win with a pseudo defensive stop to close out the game.
Pseudo indeed.
Coupled with the release of Vernon Hargraves, my goodness gracious.
Well, hang on. That's more than a pseudo stop, right? If you're talking about the interception on sudden change.
I'm talking about the last possession.
Oh, you're talking about the PI that wasn't.
Yeah, but they can't call that. You're not going to be – I mean, you just can't bitch out and give teams wins. So they did the right thing there. Now, here's the deal. On the one hand, the celebration of a win over the Cardinals and my exhilaration over the release of Vernon Hargraves speaks to the dysfunction of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers organization.
Sure.
On the other hand, it's a win, and we released Vernon Hargraves. All right.
We have audio of your reaction yesterday. Yeah. Actually, mine as well, yeah. When Vernon Hargraves was
sure.
Released.
Let's go.
Yes, it's over.
Yeah, it was... Tom and I were very excited. I think Buccaneers fans everywhere elated that the former University of Florida standout, who has done nothing in his NFL career, has been released. And
it's unbelievable how much you sound like Dave Mishkin when you get excited.
Yes! So I have to say, on the one hand, again, I'm frustrated because we keep drafting corners and none of them can play. And we find ourselves very much in the same ilk as Matt Millen, as GM of the Detroit Lions, forever drafting wide receivers because each and every one that he picked was failing to live up to the bill of a first rounder. And then he was shown the door. And perhaps Jason Light should be shown the door. But,
guys, all of my receivers are misses, and so I have to draft another receiver.
It was one of the great, pseudo meltdowns as well at a press conference because he kept getting asked about his receivers and why he keeps drafting wide receivers. He's like, look, the other ones aren't good. I got to keep picking them. I'm like, that's accurate. That's true. Just because you drafted one last year doesn't mean you don't need one this year. And the Bucks draft secondary players left and right. Still need them. Still looking for guys that can play.
Hey, they're just growing. These are growing pains.
Oh,
I'm sure that these guys are going to be great.
So is it growing pains that leads Bruce Arians to do dumbass things at the end of every football game, or really not even at the end of every football game, in the middle of every football game? Bruce, you can't tell me that a very short respite from the league caused you to go brain dead as to how to use timeouts, when to challenge, and clock management. But it's on display every week in Tampa Bay. The mismanagement of those situations is now kind of who he is in Tampa Bay. I mean, it's not an outlier. It happens every week.
So Jameis' performance in London against Carolina is a disaster, right?
Oh, it's ugly, yeah.
Well, that's what Bruce is doing every week, every single week at his respective job when it comes to dealing with challenges, timeouts,
heartbreaking.
End of half, end of game, you name it. He does it. And he even doubled down on Monday again when he was asked about the challenge without any challenges. He says he did it on purpose because he was trying to make a point.
Oh, really?
And
you're going to cost us the game so you can make a point?
It may have cost us, but it was worth it at that point. It was basically a timeout because Kyler Murray's knee was on the ground and he was resting. So it's basically a timeout. So might as well use a timeout. It might have cost us, but I wanted to make a point there.
No, well, stop doing that. Don't do that. You could use that timeout. Don't do that. That's dumb.
I think Bobby Knight may have more of a grasp of end of half, end of game,
and challenge scenarios. I always thought if you could just throw it straight up in the air as high as you possibly could, that'd be a great way. What? Yeah, the Bobby Knight challenge. Good Lord. Well, I just go into games now expecting Bruce to screw up situationally. I mean, screw up the end of halves, screw up the time allotted, both for his and the other team, like giving more time to the other team by dumbassery on our part,
yeah,
or by costing us dearly, whether that be a timeout that we need that we no longer have because he either misused or challenged something he couldn't and shouldn't have.
Also, he said he's going to continue challenging pass interference because if that's not OPI on Larry Fitzgerald, I don't know what is. So he's going to continue doing
man,
what he's doing.
Stop it, man. It's not. It's not. It wasn't. Nobody else thinks it is. What are you looking at? Anyhow, he gets it. I liked the Bruce Arians hire. I may still end up liking the Bruce Arians hire.
But there are more hurdles to clear than you thought
man,
to liking
I didn't
the hire.
Expect about this. Well, listen, the Bucs play a close game every week. In fact, in retrospect, this is a weird year, man. They're not good. This has been disappointing. There's a lot of frustration. I got you. It's all on display. But going all the way back to the 49ers game, 31-17, and obviously Jameis at the end there, I don't know what the hell that was. But the thing of it is, if in retrospect, what the 49ers became and what they are, a real good football team, you kind of look at that game and go, well, okay. And then you win over the Panthers, and you have the Giants beat. I mean, you got the Giants beat. That game's over. The game is over. You're boat racing the Giants. And your kicker cost you, and your defense cost you, and you lose the game 32-31.
And Bruce at the end.
And so the Giants.
And Bruce on a 3rd-and-2 near the goal line.
So 32-31, you lose a game you had no business losing, no reason. You would have been 2-1 at that point. Instead, you were 1-2. We were about to throw in the towel after that loss. We couldn't believe how devastating that was. And then you go on the road and you drop 55 on the Rams.
In a first half that included Bruce screwing up timeout management and clock management that gives them a free 3 points that might have proven to be important at the end.
Could have been.
If not for Ndamukong Suh's scoop and score.
Right. So you score 55 points, you set records, and you win a game that you were all stunned to see you win. So at that point, you're 2-2. But here's the weird thing. You play against the Saints, and you don't play all that well. But that's a 7-point game, and the Saints have been the most dominant team prior to this crazy throwing up on themselves this past weekend that we've seen in the league.
Yeah.
I mean, they're dominant defensively.
Sean Payton's always good for a landmine like that, though. It's typically to us.
Yeah. No, that's true.
Think about our history going to the Superdome. It doesn't make any sense, but we play them tough there.
We did again this year.
Right.
We lost 31-24. Yeah. So compared to what the Saints have done to a lot of people, I'm thinking back on that. I'm like, that's a 7-point game. I mean, that's not the end of the world. Kept fighting there, you know?
It's a 3rd-and-2 to Bobo Wilson on a drag.
Yeah.
Lovely.
Yeah, there you go. And then, obviously, Jameis has the nightmarish game against the Panthers. But even then, it's 37-26. It's not like you got your doors blown off. It's now, I know that's backdoor. There's a lot of stuff involved. No, he played terribly. I'm not trying to
he out. Did.
Yeah, that was awful.
Could have used an Evans catch before the half.
Well, yeah. It's in stride. It's going to be a 3-point game.
I'll tell you what, that the Evans that's playing in the last 3-4 weeks would have caught that football and scored.
But he didn't. He dropped it. Anyhow, but that doesn't excuse Jameis's terrible performance in that game.
No. I'm not trying to deflect from that.
Now,
please.
You're dominating the Titans. You've got that game won. Mm-hmm. On the road, And now you see the Titans do this to the Chiefs, and they've played well.
Luckiest
lately.
Freaking team in the
I
world.
Think so, too. But here's the deal. Jameis didn't lose that game, played well in that game.
No, the line judge lost the game.
No, that's true, too. But 27-23, you're in that game. Should have won that game. Jameis is right. After that game, he said, oh, that game was ours. We had it. It was over. It was. That's not on him. We screwed that up, too. Lose that game. And then Seattle goes into San Francisco, aforementioned, how good they are. And we see what they do, and that's a crazy game.
Woo.
But Seattle's good. Seattle is legitimately good. They got holes in their team, on defense especially, but they're legitimately good.
You know, typically when you say this, which is you feel more comfortable if the ball's not in your hands, you're thinking about Ravens, Steelers from last decade. Yeah. That game was, it's just because nobody could hold on to the damn ball.
Yeah, it was a turnover
fest. The weather's perfect.
Weird stuff there. Probably should have ended in a tie if they'd played it correctly. But anyhow, but the Bucs lose 40-34 in overtime. Jameis has a great game on the road in the toughest place to play in the league.
Yeah.
And they should win that game.
Also screwed up a late game time management situation.
Yes, once again. So there you go. But you lose 40-34 in overtime. And now you win this game against the Cardinals 30-27, and you have a 90-plus yard drive aided by a couple pass interference. But those are good throws. Those are plays they got to make. Anyhow, you go down there and you win that game. So here's what I'd say. Damn it, man. Every week the Bucs are in it. It doesn't matter who they're playing. Good teams, bad teams alike. It's a close football game. It's a close football game. And these little screw-ups from the head coach go a long way in deciding the outcome. That's why I went through the whole slate.
Well, and I'll tell you this, too. Just looking at the NFC standings, if wild card position 2 was 5-4, I would be incensed.
Yeah, but it's not.
But they get bailed out a little bit.
Yeah, because it's a year that the NFC is crazy.
If you argue process over results, you should still be incensed. And I am, but I do temper it a little bit because wild card position 1 and 2 look like this. Seattle at 8-2 in wild card 1. Minnesota at 7-3 in wild card. You may need to win 12 games to assure yourself a spot as a non-division winner the postseason.
Yeah, I think that's true. So, I mean, look, you got to stretch now. You got to play the Saints, unfortunately. They're really good, and they're going to be pissed off. And, it's probably a loss. But after that, it's the Falcons and the Jags and the Colts and the Lions. And I don't know. I mean, I just feel like we're going to be in a close game every week. I wouldn't be surprised if this week was really, really close.
No, honestly, this is why last week when I said if we win this one, I think we might be able to put a pack of 4 or 5 in a row. And I don't mean consecutive wins. I'm talking about 4 in a sequence of 5 or 3 out of 5. Just something to get that record a little bit more respectable. I know for the folks that want a better draft pick.
It doesn't
do you any good.
No.
But I really, it's not crazy to think about this team going 6-10, 7-9, or being 6-8 with 2 games to play, and that's against the Texans and the Falcons to finish out the season. But you had to get the first one, so spirits weren't broken. They almost were, but this one gives you at least a fighting
chance. They ought to be buoyed this week because they got rid of Vernon Hargraves, and that's a damn good thing, and it's about time.
And it's also, this league this year is nuts because it's a bunch of haves and total have-nots.
Yep.
Because last week we were, 2-6 entering the game against the Cardinals, and we had the 8th pick in the draft? Are you kidding me? That 2-6 is only good enough for number 8 in the draft order?
Again, Cincinnati's going to end up being the one that, quote-unquote, tanks for Tua, although it may not be Tua.
But, I mean, you got, 5 teams that we can't catch the other way. Yeah, if I was to say we're not going to catch Minnesota and Seattle in the wild card, which we're not, you're not going to catch Cincinnati or Washington or the Jets or the Dolphins. No way.
Well, the Dolphins have now got 2 wins, so the Dolphins are doing themselves a disservice every week.
They are doing themselves a disservice.
By the way, they've had 5.
They'll get that right down
the stretch.
By
the way, they've had 5 straight covers. If you're in that sort of thing, the Dolphins have covered 5 straight times. If anybody out there wants to know that kind of information, they are a covering machine down in Miami these days. Old Fitzy's got to play.
Old Fitzy.
Black Friday shopping has already kicked off at Bill Curry Ford, Tampa's first family of Ford for the past 60 years. Lease a new 2020 Ford Explorer XLT for just $287 per month, and 0% financing is available on many vehicles, including the new 2019 Ford Ranger. Shop and get all the details now at BillCurryFord.com. Black Friday offers expire December the 2nd. BillCurryFord.com.
Shopping for a used F-150, a car, or an SUV? Find Tampa's biggest and best used inventory at Bill Curry Ford, 1 mile north of Raymond James Stadium. Shop now at BillCurryFord.com and see the nationwide lifetime warranty on pre-owned vehicles. Now, here's Jeff Cameron and Tom Lang.
And away we go. Van Halen says, it's Lee to Kemper time. JoeBucksFan.com. Let's bring him in right now. Hello, Lee. How the hell are you, buddy?
Jeff, how's it going, guys?
It's going well. It's going great. Buccaneers win. They release Vernon Hargraves. I'm in celebration mode, if only for a week. And, again, the Bucs continue to draft defensive backs, and they continue to need defensive backs as the guys they point their finger to on draft day don't exactly emerge as the answers. And so on the one hand, it is very frustrating and a sign, again, that they're not always on the same page from player personnel standpoint. But on the other hand, I couldn't watch Vernon Hargraves anymore. I do want to ask you this. So I am curious about this. Do you know the specific play that Arians is talking about where he catches Hargraves half-stepping? Because there's a lot of them to choose from over the years, and I just didn't know which one that he was pointing to. Not just bad coverage or bad technique or the inability to do the job, but downright loafing. Which play was it that he caught him loafing, and that was the one that was a bridge too far?
It was a pass play toward the end of the first half that some people have cited as the play. We don't know specifically for sure which play it was, but we have an idea. And I tell you, and it's been Twittered out. I could retweet it. I retweeted it yesterday. I could retweet it today. I can't remember who it was specifically that had it, but I saw it. It came across my timeline. And I got to be honest with you. I can't tell if it's loafing or if he's just that slow. I really can't. I really, honest to goodness, I can't. He sort of looked like he wasn't really interested in getting physical, i.e., diving for a tackle or going
all out
to try to tackle the guy.
That's what it is, Lee. That's it. And he's done that a lot. That's not loafing. It's that I don't want to tackle people. Yes.
Mm-hmm. You can get away with that if you're Deion Sanders. He's not Deion Sanders. I mean, even Brent Grimes couldn't really get away with it at his prime, and he's not Brent Grimes. So what I thought was very interesting about this whole escapade was after the game, and fans don't give a hoot about this, but us three probably do because we're in the media, and I dealt with him a lot. Hargraves was always a stand-up dude. After the game, he would always talk to you, even if he had a rotten game, which was too often.
Every week.
He was always honest with you. He didn't make excuses. And I was talking to him Sunday. Actually, it was Jenna Lane, but I was right there. I can't remember what Jenna Lane asked him. I think it was about getting benched, and Hargraves was saying, hey, this is what Arians told me. I didn't agree. I'm sure I'll have a meeting with him this week. Well, he had a meeting, all right. Just bye-bye.
Mm. Yeah, I read his quote, and it was, very professional. He obviously said he took it, it seemed to take it like a man. Basically, hey, this is what Bruce said. I disagree, but we'll talk about it. Yeah, they talked about it, and they said goodbye. He'll probably get picked up by somebody. The league needs defensive backs. He's relatively young. He's very young. Hadn't been in the league that long. So he's got a shot somewhere. It's ability that's the problem to me. I don't know about effort. I've never claimed that he was a loafer. I just didn't think he could play.
You're doing a lot of people, and you're proven right.
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, that stinks. I don't want to be right about this anymore. I don't want to be right about these defensive backs. I want these guys to come in and dominate or give us a fighting chance, at least aspire to be averagely.
And I just wrote this maybe 10 minutes ago. I was replying to someone on JoeBucksFan.com, and I know I've said this several times on your show. People are whining about Jameis and his turnovers. I said, hey, the guy leaves the locker room. He pretty much knows he has to hang 35 on the scoreboard or the Bucs have a real shot at losing. Because not only is he fighting opposing defenses, he's fighting his own defense. If they had just an average defense, just an average secondary. I mean, the front seven is playing really, really well, especially since JPP came back. And if they just had an adequate, just no Pro Bowlers, just adequate secondary, shoot, this team would be in a wild card run. And there's a couple inside things I learned. Sunday night, I spoke with someone with, and this is one of my favorite Mike Florio lines, someone with knowledge of the situation, who told me that the Bucks at trade deadline received zero inquiries about Vernon Hargreaves. And generally, I've been told if there's a player with his, you know, on the last year of his contract, often there will be teams, you know, just nothing else, kicking the tires. What would it take to get him, thinking that the other team is going to pass on, you know, someone cheap.
Sure.
You know, it's a rental kind of thing. I was told that there were zero inquiries for Vernon Hargreaves.
Yeah, I hope he saved his money. I don't think he's
that's number one. But what was frustrating, and I know we've gone over this before, and I'm not going to harp on it much, but when Jason Light issued his statement, the Bucks general manager, when he issued his statement about the release of Hargreaves yesterday, in the statement he referenced him and Arians were discussing for, quote-unquote, a few weeks about Hargreaves' immediate future. You knew that Hargreaves' future was murky? His immediate future was murky with the Bucks, and you did nothing at the trade deadline? Nothing? That bothers me. That really bothers me because I think it's fair to say this secondary has Pearl Harbor any chance this team had at a playoff run. I don't think I'm being outrageous by saying that.
Couple things. A, you know how incensed I got when we just watched Minka Fitzpatrick go out the door and never made a play on it. I have no idea what we were doing there. That guy can play. He would have answered one of your problems. It was a no-brainer, and they didn't do it. Secondly, my question to you is, does Hargreaves' money come off the books for next year? It does, right?
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
So that's $9
million? Yes.
Okay. All right. All right, that's good. It's good to know. I'm still mad that they didn't do anything. And while all these corners and safeties were being, you know, were finding homes, I'm like, what about us? What are we doing?
Yeah.
And we never got a good answer on this other than whatever that asinine comment was from Arians about there were not enough fast guys or they were all too slow or something stupid, whatever that
was. And by the way, I asked. You guys kept asking me. I finally asked.
No, you did. I was so proud of you from afar. I saw that you asked and then you tweeted out his answer and I was like, I wish I hadn't asked Lee to ask that. Because that's just
he's going to scoff at me. Who was available?
It's a ridiculous answer. They were all too slow. What are you talking about?
Our good friend Sean Sullivan at Bill Curry Ford, the first family of Ford.
Yes,
Tampa,
my man Sean Sullivan.
Like how he squeezed that in, right?
Yep.
At any rate, he goes nuts because Marcus Peters, granted a knucklehead,
yeah.
Marcus Peters could have been had for a fifth-round pick. That's basically a throwaway pick. And I understand he's a knucklehead, but guess what? He can also play a whole lot better than Vernon Hargreaves.
Well, you could have had him. You could have had Minka Fitzpatrick. Hell, you could have you could have absolutely refurbished your entire defensive backfield if you had wanted to.
Jeff, I know you're a Pittsburgh guy at heart, and you're a Bucs fan, but I know you have Pittsburgh roots. Has Fitzpatrick turned around the Steelers almost single-handedly?
I mean, defense? Yeah, he's been awesome. And, I'm indifferent about the Steelers. I'm a Pirates fan through and through, but in terms of baseball. But, yeah, I watch the Steelers every week because I also like to gamble. And what I would tell you is that I've had a little money either on the other side in the Colts-Steelers game or on the Steelers against the Rams. And so when you watch these games, you see the impact this guy has every week. He's been a godsend for them, a shot in the arm. So, it's very frustrating. The Bucks front office is obviously in the crosshairs from Bucks fans everywhere all the time, and it could be redundant for us. Yeah, they should be. You know, we find ourselves in this perpetual loop, man, where every year we go into the draft and you're like, well, you need secondary players. Again with this. Every year. Tom and I joke on the show all the time. It's like Matt Mellon having to draft wide receivers every year, every time he whiffed in Detroit. I mean,
it's like a gerbil on a wheel.
Yeah, it's just over and over and over again, and we're going to have to do it again. And I'm also frustrated because as we sit here and talk about this, and I went through the schedule, you know, the oddity here is the Bucks play a close game. No matter who they play. So whether it's a really good team or a really bad team, it's going to be close. And so the margin for error is very slim, but you also get a glimpse of how close they could be to being pretty decent. You know, obviously you just throw away the Giants game 32-31. Arians screwed up in that game, and the secondary was terrible. And you let a rookie quarterback who's been awful every game since look like Joe Montana. But then you bounce back and you beat the Rams. Your secondary's terrible in that game, but you still drop 55 and you win that game. Now, you think about it. Now, I know some of these scores are misleading, But 31-24 against the Saints team that prior to throwing up on themselves last week has been a dominant outfit. Then you look at 37-26, Jameis has the worst game of his Buccaneer career out in London. But it's still 37-26. I know that's a deceiving score. Then you have the Titans beat. The Titans are beat. And then you blow that game as well, and the refs screw us as well. But you lose 27-23. The Seahawks were one of the better teams in the league. They've got holes, obviously. They just went into San Francisco and won in overtime. You fly out there and you play that team, and you're in position to win. And you go to overtime and you lose 40-34. My point is, every week the Bucs are in it. They're right there. If you get a few stops, if Arian stops screwing up clock management, challenging timeouts, all that, you probably are a team that has a shot at finishing somewhere near 7-9, 8-8. Instead, you know, they're going to finish up 500. Period.
I just wonder, and maybe Arians knew better. Maybe it was calculated. But if the Bucs had lost Sunday, how many people would be screaming about Arians, you know, throwing the challenge flag when he didn't have any challenge left, to, in his words, to prove a point? Like, what?
What? Yeah, well, this is not your personal playground, man. We're not out here for you to make points. You tried to lose the Carolina game on the road. You have made countless mistakes with clock management that Tom and I sit here in detail every week we do the show. And then that. What are you doing, man?
And what's hilarious is, and Cutter was the same way, they being Arians and Cutter, they actually hire full-time coaches to monitor the clock for them.
Those guys,
they ignore them, or the guy is incompetent. I don't know.
They're stealing money. I want to be that guy, because apparently it doesn't matter what you do. You can just screw it up to high heaven. You get paid. And I'm sure he's getting paid handsomely. Those guys are stealing money. Stealing it. It drives me nuts.
What's really amusing in a perverse way, you know, obviously when a team struggles, like the Bucs have struggled for years, for a decade actually, give or take a year, people come down on the Glazers like, oh, they don't care. Look at the money they're shelling out year after year. You know, Arians has this army of assistant coaches, like over 2,000 coaches. And can you say the Glazers are getting a return on their investment with these guys? I don't think so.
Oh, well, you know, now you're going to get a really, really angry New Orleans club. But I will say this, is as you're watching the Saints beat the Bucs Sunday, the one thing to keep in mind is you do have a stretch right after that where it's the Falcons, Jags, Colts, Lions. You got a shot to put together a little something-something before this is all said and done, and maybe make yourself feel a little bit better with a couple wins in a row or 3 out of 5 or something like that.
Yeah, you do. And that's what's frustrating about this season. And I'll say it again, ignoring the secondary, not going out of the trade deadline, getting someone. And I'm not even talking about a Pro Bowler. Yeah, Minkah Fitzpatrick would have been great. Marcus Peters would have been great. But he didn't need a Pro Bowler, just an average guy where this team would have been. It is frustrating. I mean, it gives you hope. And right now, that's all Bucs fans can – that's all I have to grasp to is hope. But it is frustrating. They could make a run. Who knows? But, the odds are obviously slim to none. But you don't know if you don't win. And we shall see. But it's frustrating because every Bucs fan can see where this team could have been with a little foresight by the front office.
Yeah, it was a so-so day for Jameis. I don't know that it was a check mark in the category of keep him or a check mark in the category of let him walk, but it certainly was up and down. It was the full Jameis experience, as we like to say. He was good. He was terrible. He was something in between. He was all those things on that Sunday. We'll keep watching and we'll keep reading. JoeBucksFan.com. Lee, it's always a pleasure, brother. Be well.
Jeff, thank you so much. Have a good one.
All right, you too. Take care. That's Lee DeKemper joins us every week. I mean, listen, there's no need to get in-depth in personnel stuff and all that other stuff this week. I mean, let's play this game on Sunday, and hopefully, like hell, like, I mean, hey, you know, they're in every game. I shouldn't say they're going to get blown out. They're in every game. Who knows?
Well, the offense will have to lead the way. The problem here is Jameis is coming off of a game where he doesn't look comfortable to start, and he never looks comfortable against the Saints. Cam Jordan's in his head.
Well, because Cam Jordan's in his face, always. We can't block him.
But there are good
He'd
defensive
be in my
players.
Head too.
Well, I mean, you know, Aaron Donald wasn't in his head.
But
when
they
he
blocked
got to
Aaron
LA.
Donald. They blocked him.
I know, but he's got a history with Aaron Donald of Aaron disrupting him.
He does. It was weird, though. I don't know what was going on when he stepped foot out in L.A., but he was the sure, confident, strong, and I mean that in the right way.
Cocksure.
Cocksure.
Yeah. I don't know if the other one's a word.
player that that you want when you step on the field. He knew he was going to have a good game. You could see it from the first throw. It was crazy, right?
Yeah, it's but you know it early with him. You typically do. The one time I thought this year that there was an exception to the rule was actually the disastrous Carolina game. He kept coming back. Last year in situations like that, Cleveland and Cincinnati,
that look on his face,
he was
done.
Yeah. He was done. But he fought back against Carolina. This week, though, something about his gait into the huddle.
He didn't trust it.
I didn't trust it. He didn't walk with purpose. Sometimes he walks out. Sometimes he trots out. Sometimes he almost jogs and says, oh, God, here we go. And I just felt like, and it was a first guess, you can ask my fiance.
Yeah, he didn't like it. He didn't look right.
This looks bad. I don't like this. Then the first drive happens. I go, oh, okay.
And here we go.
2-7. Here we come.
Bucks fans, prices at Bill Curry Ford, better than good. They are the best, and it's all backed by their $5,000 best price guarantee. Get shopping right now at BillCurryFord.com or at the easy-to-get-to showroom on Raymond James Stadium, on Dale Mabry, I should say. Don't forget their nationwide lifetime warranty on new and pre-owned vehicles. Mention Scuttlebox or Joe Bucks Fan, and General Manager Sean Sullivan will give you an extra special discount. Bill Curry Ford, Tampa's first family of Ford. Make sure you mention Scuttlebox. Let's mention the Scuttlebucks. Joe gets too much credit.
Ooh,
no
I
more.
Got a special prize
yeah.
for you.
I'm talking about the Scuttlebucks, Sean.
Shopping for a used F-150, a car, or an SUV? Find Tampa's biggest and best used inventory at Bill Curry Ford, 1 mile north of Raymond James Stadium. Shop now at BillCurryFord.com and see the nationwide lifetime warranty on pre-owned vehicles. Now, here's Jeff Cameron and Tom Lang.
Don't forget, friends, Black Friday shopping has already kicked off at Bill Curry Ford, Tampa's first family of Ford for the past 60 years. Lease a new 2020 Ford Explorer XLT for just $287 a month. 0% financing to go with. That's nice. It's available on many vehicles, including the all-new 2019 Ford Ranger. Shop and get all the details now at BillCurryFord.com. Black Friday offers expire December the 2nd, BillCurryFord.com. So what do you expect, Tom? What do you expect Sunday? I think we've both just gone ahead and penciled in, or pin even, a loss in for Sunday against the Saints. But I don't know. I think we probably have to talk about where we're at with our further assessment of Jameis Winston. We do it every week.
Yeah, I'm worried about a back-to-back back-to-back performance where he doesn't look comfortable. I thought the performances against Tennessee and certainly the one on the road against Seattle, those are really good performances that he turned in. And if I was talking about a few weeks back that it went from, you know, minus 250 that he was going to get a contract extension to plus 105, I think it's back in the minus. But a clunker against the Saints where he looks rattled from snap number one could switch this thing back the other way. It's going to be a roller coaster, I think. That's who he is as a quarterback.
Well, and then you have to ask yourself, if that's who he is as a quarterback, do you want to be married to that long term or even for another year? Because that's what I come back to. He's capable of looking like an upper echelon quarterback in this league frequently. He does it often. But he also looks like a guy that can easily be rattled and has days where – and I got a theory. We've talked about this on and off over a couple years' worth of Scuttlebucks. I feel like if he misses on that first deep ball or the first couple of deep balls, he misses the rest of the day. If he hits it early, he's going to be on it the rest of the day. There's a confidence issue on the deep ball outside the hash, down the sideline, and I cannot – it doesn't seem to be a consistent thing other than make early, make late. Miss early, miss the rest of the way, miss the rest of the night.
No, it's been a disaster for him, especially last year. There were so many touchdowns in the DeSean Jackson era. We can say what we want about DeSean being a puny individual, more than just his stature. Mm-hmm. But, you know, these things are still open. And so there are a lot of bad dudes in the league that are catching passes down the field.
Tyreek Hill does.
Tyreek Hill is a bad dude.
Yeah, but, terrible human being.
He is found frequently, accurately. Down the field, I don't know. For me, I'd say you probably at least entertain the idea of a bridge deal a couple of years. You still have the franchise rights. That's the thing, too, that I never understood. Last year, there was a panic down there of people one way or the other talking about, do you want to be married to this guy forevermore? And it's like, well,
it's
actually,
not forevermore, right?
It was 2 years ago on the Scuttlebucks because he has a fifth-year option. That's what I said a couple years ago. He's got a fifth-year option, and then you could franchise him back-to-back seasons. I know you don't want people don't like to associate the word franchise with Jameis necessarily, but if it gives you a zero-risk one-year trial again, then that gives you the flexibility as an organization to figure it out. Because the one thing I would argue is under Arians, I'd prefer to see 20 games of work.
Yeah, I
want to
see more. That's okay.
Because
that's Leftwich,
which is a coordinator, is still growing. So there's so many things.
Yeah.
It's hard to parse.
So two things here. You hit it at the end because I was thinking along those lines of, you know, when you have Arians telling everybody 7, 8, 9 games takes a while for people to learn my offense, et cetera. Well, I think that's true both of any quarterback that we're seeing, in this case, Jameis, but also I think it's true of Godwin. I see week to week where he's not real consistent with his routes, and those two are constantly having conversation either after a pick or a throw to an area where there's nobody, and then you think, oh, Jameis, what are you doing? And then you see Godwin take the blame. Like, clearly, and Arians has said before that Godwin ran the wrong route or that Evans ran the wrong route. So, a few things here. I want to see how this looks by the end of the year under Arians, this offense. When people say things like, well, the Bucs have elite weapons, do they? Evans is a superstar who sometimes goes missing, but a superstar nonetheless. Godwin is emerging as a very, very good player. But I was arguing with a buddy of mine, if you want me to find 10 tandems in the league that are better than Evans and Godwin, I think I can. And they don't use the tight end in Tampa Bay these days. I mean, we saw him. It was nice.
Yeah.
But, you know, O.J. Howard has not been what they hoped he would be.
No, they were better off last year with Humphreys, but Humphreys commanded a lot of money on the open market, and we miss him.
So, they got two guys they trust, one who sometimes goes missing, the other who's also struggling a little bit in this offense, to learn it, to where he's supposed to be, right? No consistency out of the tight end, average offensive line, not a dominant, great running game. I don't know that they have a ton of weapons.
No, okay.
They're not depleted to the point where you say he's got nobody. He's got somebody. But they're not loaded. There's this perception that they're loaded. They're not loaded.
No, they're not. But what they are is top heavy. And if O.J. Howard was a part of the game plan every single week,
then you
could make a better argument. I still wouldn't say they're loaded because, to me, a receiving core loaded means you got 4 or 5 deep. Look at Kansas City. Every one of those freaking guys runs a 4-2. Sammy Watkins might be one of the slowest guys on their roster.
Yeah, and admittedly, they run a really fun offense, and that quarterback is elite. And so he makes a lot of guys look good, too.
But you forget about Kelsey. He's the most uncoverable tight end in the league, George Kittle.
Sure. You look around the league, you can see this. I was thinking about it on Sunday because I was actually texting back and forth with a friend who's forever telling me how loaded they are, how many weapons they have. I'm like, not really. You can double Evans, and now it's Godwin, and that's
it. Right, exactly. Because, do you trust Perryman?
No.
Do you trust Scotty Miller?
No.
Although that was a nice break. Hopefully that's a breakthrough moment for him because it's a good adjustment on a throw behind him over the middle that he made.
He also had to drop the touchdown.
But it was after the drop touchdown, so at least he redeemed himself. Maybe that's a mental breakthrough for him. If it's those three and you have Howard as your third and you actually use him like a third, meaning 6 to 10 targets a game, there's a better argument to make, but Brait isn't what he was 3 years ago.
No, he's never out there either. I mean, you never even hear him.
Right. I think they have top-heavy, elite, top-end talent at the receiver.
I think Jameis broke Brait.
Oh, he did?
I think he broke him.
Yeah.
He used him while he could, and he made that guy money because that guy wasn't.
He would have broken
elsewhere.
Humphreys if Humphreys stuck around.
I don't know. Humphreys had a good sense of when to get down.
He still got popped.
He did, but he's tough. That's a good player. They miss him. Jameis misses him because he was reliable. You knew where he was going to be.
No, that was a big loss.
Yeah.
They thought Perryman was going to be this magic solution.
Garbage.
Yes.
Perryman is garbage.
Yeah. So. I think in general, Jameis. I think he's done a lot to erase the Carolina performance and prove that that's just who he is. He's going to have a clunker. He's going to have a game that leaves you thinking he's done it. He's broken through. And he's going to have a lot of in-between. But if you're not going to pick in the top 10,
yeah, that's
you franchise him, you sign him for a couple of years, whatever. You're not tanking next year, so you're not tanking for Trevor Lawrence, unfortunately, if that's what the route you wanted to go.
That would be a route that I could understand.
I don't understand it, too.
I don't believe in tanking.
Guy's got to freaking learn how to look off a receiver every once in a while, too. The NFL will teach him that very quickly if he doesn't learn that lesson.
He'll do it. He's fantastic. He's going to be great. I don't worry about him. I'd draft Burrow right now if we were in position to do it.
Yeah.
But we're not.
I still think that this dude, he can be an above-average NFL quarterback, and I think the reason I think that with at least an outside shot to be a top 7 or 8 quarterback, I don't think he'll ever be in that Rodgers, Brady.
But who the hell is right?
But meaning like of their time, he's a top 3 to 5. Like even Roethlisberger was a top 5 quarterback of his era. He was never talked about, but he was always in that top 5. Because we always look at him under the microscope of you've got to be perfect in order to win. So every flaw matters more. If Bruce Arians was a clock management idiot, but we were winning every game by 2 scores, I mean, it's not even a real top topic down in Tampa this week because we won the football game.
Right.
But he screwed the pooch there once again.
No. This is my counter all the time with Winston, and Lee brought it up earlier. He enters the field knowing damn well he's got to score 30 plus points every game. There's a certain weight that comes with those expectations, a certain amount of pressure that's a little bit abnormal. It's not like you can just go play the game. Like they tried to tell him, hey, you don't have to win it. Yeah, you kind of do.
He does.
Yeah, you kind of do.
He does.
Bruce, listen, I know you're trying to tell the kid he doesn't have to win it. Yeah, he kind of does because the defense sure as hell ain't.
Right, if he's allowed to play safe because the defense is 20th in the league. 20th!
And then he'll check down and they'll punt.
Right.
But he can't do that.
You still win the football game. You're like, wow, Jameis is a lot better. Is he really?
I've been arguing if I were his agent, his dad, somebody close to him, I'd say, do it. Don't force the issue because you're going to get blamed. So here's what we're going to do. It's not your fault that defense can't get stops. If it's not there, you check down and you punt. And you know what? Don't turn it over.
Well,
you hold it and you turn it. How would that?
Oh, of course.
That narrative would change.
The narrative would change. But here's what I'd say about that is if his dad or his agent or his quarterback coach, George, whatever, Whitfield or Clyde Christensen said, just check down. Don't worry about it. That would be the first time that he ever really did because he really has a reluctance to do so.
Because he's talented enough to make big plays, and it's why they wanted him. It's why everybody wanted him. You don't want Mariota sitting the bench because he checked down always. He never took a chance down the field.
Yeah.
And they said, well, we're done here. We've got open people you refuse to throw to. You're a check down Charlie. Go to hell. You got to let guys do what they do. But the problem is when he does it in this sense, he gets himself in trouble because he has to press because he knows they're not going to get stops.
Yeah.
And then that leads to turnovers, and that's all anybody talks about. Now, rightfully, he gets ripped for the turnovers. I'm not saying you shouldn't bring that up. But, you know, maybe just a better wherewithal as to when you take chances and when you don't. That's probably what we're waiting
on. How to strike that balance, I can't possibly know when you're forced to score 28 to 35
a
week.
It's
hard to know. The one thing I will say about the check down throws, though, is I – just said, you know, if he does, it'll be the first time he consistently would actually, you know,
well, he does
be open
to what's-his-face all the time.
But he got the ball out a little bit more on time this week down the stretch. The Ronald Jones throws, for the most part, pretty good. One was a little late. But he threw to Dari a couple of times, and it was in rhythm. That's a difficult pass to make, a swing pass.
Yeah.
But it was good depth. It gave him a chance to get his feet underneath him and momentum pushing forward up to break the sticks, and he did. So, you know, that's the difference between Dari dropping that ball in Tennessee on a second down. Remember that play? That ball's late. I don't know why he's hitching. I don't know what the hell he's hitching for. Get rid of the damn ball.
Yeah.
But if he becomes more decisive, I think it's for two reasons. One, he's more comfortable in the offense, and two, he trusts people to be where they're supposed to be. I think he doesn't just see ghosts because of rushers and the problem of our tackles.
No, because they're frequently not where they're supposed to be.
Yeah.
And he gets burned.
I think I think the side adjust or whatever the hell the receivers are responsible for, they haven't mastered it
yet
either.
Well, that's my point about the offense. Like, okay, by
more time.
4 weeks from now, let's see what we got.
He could suck for the next month and we say forget it. But if it's pretty much this kind of thing where
he'll be good.
You know, maybe there's one clunker and they're out of 7 weeks of decent football to pretty good football, you got to at least keep them under team control for another year.
Well, that's the other thing. When you look around, it's not like these guys are falling out of trees, man. They're not everywhere. All these guys that, you know, were going to be the saviors, most of them don't make it. You know, there's already, I mean, look. So, for example, the Bears drafted Mitchell Trubisky and moved up to get him. Well, they're done with him already. They're already done with him. You know, Darnold's regressing. Sam Darnold's regressing already. Look around the league. Most people are like, that guy's not very good or he's average. That's, you only get lucky every now and again. That's why we're always jealous when it happens. The Patriots have the same damn quarterback for 20 years. I mean, they haven't had to do it, but not many people are that fortunate. You don't. Aaron Rodgers just doesn't come around every once, you know, but once in a great while.
Even the other had to kick Brett Favre the hell out of town and go let him play,
and they weren't even sure what they had because they drafted him that late.
Yeah.
So I mean, I don't know. I do think obviously we do believe that Trevor Lawrence is going to be good, but admittedly, maybe he won't.
I think he's going to have a growing pain, and then he'll be fine.
Yeah, but he's got all the tools, that's for sure. Anyhow, it's fun to watch, though. I don't lose it every weekend like I once did. It's sort of, okay, we'll do the referendum on the season. I'll talk to you about it each week. We'll mention it, where we're at with this.
Yeah, I think that's the hard part is, and I'm not knocking, especially where we are, joebucksfan.com, but it's just football, there are so few games that it feels like every result is a new definitive. It's like period, end of sentence.
He can play. He's great. Got to sign him now. Oh, God, we're done with this guy. Can't do it. Let's move on from him. It's that way every week, back and forth,
And that's just, I don't think that's productive, and it's not realistic either.
No.
That's how you look at it as a GM, you'd be on the waiver wire every single week.
Which many think ours should be. Good work out of you, sir. Good work from Lee to Kipper, JoeBucksFan.com. And thanks to all of you for listening. Until next time, go Bucks!